welcome to Hazel and Katniss and Harry and Star, a young adult literature podcast, their film and television adaptations, and everything in between. I'm Joe.
And I'm Brenna.
And our show is located on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee, the Huron-Wendat, and the Anishinaabe on lands connected to the Toronto Purchase, Treaty 13 of 1805.
And on the Tecumloops Tay-Sequepin territory within the unceded traditional lands of Sequepin Ulu. And today's text, the Spiderwick Chronicles TV show, takes place in a fictional town in Michigan, but it was filmed primarily in and around Deer Lake in Burnaby, British Columbia, the traditional home of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking Coast Salish nations, which include the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem peoples.
Welcome to Spiderwick.
It's my fault we had to move here.
You've been going through a hard time for a while now. And we both know it's not getting better.
Once we clean this house up, this will be great. And I know we can all use a fresh start.
Lucinda is my favorite person ever.
Remember the lessons I taught you.
It's full of secrets and surprises.
My father cataloged each and every creature of the invisible world. The pages are in hidden vaults all over Henson.
Grace family is coming. Arthur Spiderwick's field guide will soon be ours.
Ogareth's a deceiver, a shapeshifter.
The world would be a better place without humans.
Find the pages. Put Spiderwick's field guide back together. You have to help save everyone.
I'm just a kid.
That's why you can succeed.
And Joe, I've been to Deer Lake, so I don't mean to brag, but
essentially you've been here.
It's definitely a lake I've been to, so.
Okay. So, yeah, Brenna, we're dropping this mini-sode as promised slash threatened in this week's major episode, maxi episode. What do we used to call these back in the day?
I think just episodes.
Just episodes. But, yeah, so as we predicted, the screeners came in about a hot second right after we recorded the film version. So you declined to watch them because you had other things to do. And I said, well, I'm curious. So I dug in and I watched all 8 episodes of this first season, which is entirely available now on Roku.
And I am glad you did, because I am curious enough to hear more about it, but not curious enough to invest time. Also, I think it's nice that you felt like we should talk about it because they had been good enough to send us the screeners. And I was like, too slow, losers.
Which I'm not going to say I regret my decision, but I am mixed on this. So as I told you before we hit record, I don't think you would have enjoyed this, but I do think that there are things worth talking about.
All right. Well, tell me how it's the same or different, maybe.
Okay. So I'll quickly run you through the cast. So this was created and showrun by Aaron Ellie Collette, who worked on Daybreak as well as Heroes, so familiar with television. It stars Lyon Daniels as Jared, who is our protagonist, same as in the movie and the book series. But Daniels does not play both characters. So the show decides not to make them identical. So these are fraternal twins. So we have Noah Cottrell as Simon. And then we have Mykella Lee as Mallory and Joy Bryant as Helen. So that rounds out the Grace family. We'll quickly note, it's very obvious if you've even looked at a still or a promotional image, we've done an inclusive flip, Brenna. So this is a Black family.
So I'm right off the bat intrigued about the choice to not have them be identical twins, because as we talked about, the one actor two parts didn't really work for me, in that they effectively had to make the second character a non-entity in order for it to work. But there is a whole plot point around a switcheroo that requires twinliness. So I'm curious what happens there.
The short story version is that this TV show completely does its own thing. So we're not adapting the books in any way, shape, or form.
Oh.
We're taking the spirit of it. So the Grace family moves in and they, you know, do have to deal with Thimbletack, who is voiced by Jack Dylan Grazer, who is familiar to folks who know the It movies. But, basically, yeah, we're still looking for Arthur Spiderwick's missing pages. He does briefly appear, as does Lucinda, who is played by Charlaine Woodard. But for the most part, this is a new original story. So we have Mulgrath, who instead of leading an army of goblins, is basically working independently. And Brenna, we totally got it wrong. So Christian Slater is definitely not the Grace father.
Oh.
He is Mulgrath in disguise for the entirety of the 8 episodes. So he is masquerading as this character, Dr. Dorian Brower, who is a therapist who works at the local psychiatric institute, which is where Lucinda's been for the entirety of her adult life. And we basically watch the real character of Dr. Brower get murdered in the opening scene of the TV show.
Cool.
And then he is played by Christian Slater as Mulgrath for the entirety of the show.
So I'm going to interject here to say that if we actually see someone die, this is a little bit ramped up in terms of the nobody dies. We have that weird disappearing, like we're going to live forever in the meadow kind of vibe with the movie version. But I guess this ups those stakes a little bit. Like people could actually die in the TV show.
Yes, because we actually also kill Lucinda in the second episode. So Mulgrath kills her in the woods. She does continue to appear. It's kind of like what we saw in the film where those weird fairy spite fight whatever things abducted Arthur Spiderwick. So she basically says hey, can I get a life extension so that I can help Jared out? But she fully dies, so she's just dead and helping him from the afterlife for most of the season.
Okay, all right. So the vibes are different, I would say.
The vibes are very different. Now, much like the film, we're not doing most of the fae creatures. So, you do get a glimpse of a unicorn. There is a new character who is played by Olivia Allen Lynn, who folks would know from the Chucky TV show. She plays Calliope, who is Mulgrath's sidekick. And she is what's called a fetch, so she can predict human characters' deaths.
So, Joe?
Mm-hmm.
Joe?
Yeah.
Joe, are you saying that the TV show makes fetch happen?
Yes, even though it only wants to call it a guest star. Even though she's in 7 of the 8 episodes.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so what were your take-homes? Were there aspects of it you really liked? It sounds like I wouldn't have liked it, just by your own vibes. But what worked? What didn't work?
Okay, so I do think part of the reason you would not enjoy this is because the CGI is sketch.
Oh,
so we predicted that it wouldn't look super great, and we were mostly correct.
Oh.
Thankfully, we're not seeing a ton of it. And that was one of the criticisms that people had, is that this is supposed to be a world infested with magical creatures. But most of the focus is on the Grace family. And because Christian Slater very rarely comes out of his Mulgrath human costume, as in he looks like Christian Slater for most of the series.
Oh, okay. All right. So there's bad CGI and not enough of it, you're saying?
Yeah, mostly when you see Thimbletack, you're just like, oh no, that does not look good. And then when you see some of the kind of fey creatures, almost like ballerina flower figures, you're like, okay, they don't look great. But most of the time it's fine because you're not really seeing a lot of them. But then people simultaneously criticize the fact that there's just too much drama within the Grace family. So this to me is the most interesting piece. The whole season hinges on why did the family have to move to Henson, Michigan from New York? And the reason is actually kept a secret until episode 7 when you get Jared's backstory. But he is a very, very angry boy. So he has a very close connection with Simon. Simon stands up for him all the time. And over the course of the season, there's a divide that gets like basically driven between them by Calliope at Mulgrath's insistence. So there's like a relationship that forms between Simon and Calliope. And Jared becomes increasingly more paranoid and suspicious because he learns from Lucinda he can't trust anyone. And we learn, you know, oh, Mulgrath can take on other people's appearances. So that happens a fair amount in the back half. But Jared basically starts to become distrustful of everyone. But it's presenting like a mental health break. So like the show is actually kind of very interested in what does this troubled teen boy do and look like when he can't trust anyone.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So he actually gets like institutionalized in episode 7.
Oh, I mean, there's a lot of this that sounds really promising to me, but also it feels like a very different primary text.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it gets pretty heavy and sometimes it almost becomes cumbersome because in certain ways you want Jared to become more of a conventional hero. And he really resists that. But it also means like the Grace family does not work closely together. Like when they, spoiler alert, ultimately think that they have banished Mulgrath in the finale, it feels almost unconvincing because they've been at each other for so much of the series.
Right. It also sounds, and I have no idea, but did they age it up? Because this does not sound middle grade.
Oh, 100%. These are all like 17-year-old, 18-year-old teenagers.
Okay, this makes sense to me.
Yeah, but I did want to give like a shout out to a couple of other things that do work. So I wanted to highlight the fact that we have a couple of made for the TV show characters. So we've got people that are similarly in therapy, like Jared is forced to go to counseling with Dr. Brower, and he meets a couple of other friends. So Hunter Dillon plays Hatcher, who is a kid who has to wear a helmet, but it's like basically just for his own mental stability. Like he doesn't want to take the helmet off because he thinks it protects him. Mm. And then we also have Mamona Tamada. She was Claudia in the Babysitter's Club as Amiko. And she's actually really cool. You almost start to think she and Jared might get together, even though he also gives off weird queer-coded vibes. But I guess the master plan, so Mulgrath's plan, is so he puts everyone in town to sleep at a certain point. So like people start to fall asleep slowly, including Amiko, which is Mamona Tamada's character. And then over the course of the 8 episodes, more and more and more people start to fall asleep. And the idea is that he's going to hatch his dragon and feed all of these sleeping people to it by the series finale.
Wow. That is dark.
It is dark. Yeah. There's a bunch of different like side adventures. Like at one point, Simon and Calliope go to New York so that we can learn more about the dad who, you know, similar to the book, he was just like, I'm a bad dad and I never signed up for this, so I can't be there for you kind of deal. So there's certain things that work okay well that feel like they're a direct adaptation. But yeah, there's a lot that's quite different for the TV show.
All right. So final verdict, like if folks hung with us through the reading the book and watching the movie, should they hop onto the show as well? Or did you give it a miss?
I'm like 50-50. I don't regret watching it, but 8 episodes in a short amount of time felt heavy. Like it wasn't always enjoyable, particularly some of the really dramatic stuff with Jared. It strikes this weird balance between it's very interesting and I almost wanted more of that, but it also feels like it's coming at the expense of moving the story forward. Like I almost wish that this had just been, let's talk about this troubled boy and how his family doesn't know what to do with him, but we got to deal with goblins and dragons and other things.
Like you do. I'm also curious, Joe, before we leave this topic, we did talk a little bit in the main episode about some of the development hell that the TV show seems to have gone through. It was like a Disney Plus series, and then Disney Plus like made the whole thing and finished it and then was like, nah, actually, we don't want to air this. So it went to Roku. Do you have a sense of like, does that show, I guess is my question, does it feel like a show that went through kind of torment?
Not at all. And I gather that it's because they had shot the whole thing before any of the drama happened. So, you know, whether or not it got the full financial treatment. Like, could I imagine this airing on Disney Plus? Yeah, pretty easily.
Okay.
And even though I don't think the FX looks great, it's passable enough. Like, it reminded me of the American Born Chinese series right. that we looked at, where you were like, yeah, some of this feels like it's stretching to be more cinematic than it actually is, but it's passable. So I think at the end of the day, they saw the finished product and they said, ugh, we're just not really sure what to do with this. So they sold it off to Roku for a song. And I think Roku is looking for original content. So at the time of recording, this was the highest rated new show or movie that Roku has ever dropped. So I used season and series interchangeably in this. I could imagine if this does reasonably well that they could pick it up, because it definitely ends with a cliffhanger. So we could do a season two if we wanted.
Of course. What streamer doesn't end with a cliffhanger, Joe? What streamer doesn't?
Yeah. Yeah. So one final thing is I had to highlight this just because it is so glaringly bad in every single episode. There is a theme song. It's called Something Magic by the Regrets that plays over the end credits of this. And it is so out of character for the darkness of this show. Every time it began, I was just like, what is this? Bretta, I sent it to you just to be like, am I off track with this? Is this an okay song? Like, I think it's properly catchy, but if you watch the show, it just feels completely incongruous.
Well, just for the record, all I knew going into this episode was the theme song that you sent me to listen to, and the images that I saw of Deer Lake having been transformed into the manor. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I was not expecting any of the dark vibes that you talked about. And I also have to say, I went on a little rabbit hole search about the band. And, like, they're allegedly a punk band. This is the fluffiest, like, cotton candy song ever. And Joe, the lead singer of The Regrets, is the ex-girlfriend of friend of the show, Dylan Minnette.
There we go. Mm-hmm. It's a small world, after all. Everything's filmed in Canada, and everything comes back to Dylan Minnette.
Do you see it too? I don't know what to do. Call me on the telephone, 'cause I'm feeling all alone. Do.